there's a High Court case, the Pedro case, and it gives effect, the bill gives effect to the constitutional judgment in the divorce matter, and it also gives effect to the finding in the, or the order judgment in the Pedro case, and Advocate Tennyson was involved in both those cases, so she has first-hand experience of the operational issues around state patients. She was also part of a task team that helped in the development of the bill before it was introduced into Parliament. And then on to the left of Advocate Tennyson is Ms. Inga Hontong. I introduced her yesterday. She's new in our Chief Directorate, and she's from our Cape Town office. So as I said yesterday, she will be appearing before this committee quite often, possibly in our place, when so that we can save costs and don't have to always come down from Pretoria. So that is Ms. Hontong. Chair, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Dupria, but perhaps before we start, I want to state up front that this bill should have been introduced long ago. As I said, it's a constitutional court to give effect to a constitutional court judgment, and there's a deadline of June this year. And if I may say up front, and I take accountability and responsibility for it, the bill should have been introduced beforehand. May I just say, a question may be asked why, only now I can say that everything that could have gone wrong with the bill went wrong with the bill in the procedures that preceded its introduction into Parliament. So by way of introduction, I think I owe it to the committee to say I apologise on behalf of the department for the delay in getting it here. And if I may then hand over to Mr. Dupria. Thank you.
Dupria, thank you. Proceed. Morning, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm going to work from PowerPoint presentation that was handed to the committee. As you know, I will speak to the document. I will not necessarily read from it, and I'm going to, by way of introduction, cover then the first four pages of the PowerPoint presentation. As Mr. Bassett has indicated, the bill aims to give effect to two judgments. The first and foremost the important one is then the divorce case, which dealt with section 77(6) of the Criminal Procedure Act, and then the Pedro case, in which section 79 of the Criminal Procedure came under scrutiny. Now, just to give you background information, Mr. Chair, sections 77 and to 79 deals with that part of the criminal procedure where the mental capacity of an accused person comes into play. Section 77 deals with those instances where an accused person is, as a result of an intellectual disability, not able to understand the proceedings so as to make a proper defense in his or her case. Under such circumstances, whenever it appears to the court during the proceedings that the accused person is not capable of understanding the proceedings, the court will then make an order or direct that a panel be established to look at or investigate and report to the court on the intellectual condition, if I may call it that, of the accused person. Upon receipt of that report, the court then will make a finding and order that the accused person be institutionalized. That is section 77. Section 78 deals with criminal capacity and the mental capacity of an accused person. Now, this is the case where a person suffered from a condition when he or she committed an offense, and the court once again ordered that an investigation be conducted in terms of section 79 and reported on, and then a decision is made with regard to the criminal capacity of the accused person. Now, Mr. Chair, just to highlight in that information, you will find on the second page of our PowerPoint presentation, in the divorce case, Currently, section 7076A1 provides that if a court finds that an accused person is not capable of understanding the proceedings, the court must, in the case of a charge of murder, culpable homicide, rape, compelled rape, or any other offence involving serious violence, direct that the accused person concerned be detained in a psychiatric hospital or a prison pending the decision of a judge in chambers in terms of section 47 of the Mental Health Care Act. So that section 7076A1 provides them for the serious cases, the serious offences. The less serious offences is then provided for in section 7076A2, which requires then that a court must then order that the accused person be admitted in an institution as if he or she were an involuntary mental health care user contemplated then in section 37 of the Mental Health Care Act. Now on page 3 of our PowerPoint presentation, Mr. Chair, we indicate briefly what was stated in the DeVos case. The Constitutional Court had a problem with the fact that the court is subject to compulsory imprisonment of an accused person and does not have a wider discretion as the court does have in section 78 of the Act to provide orders that might be more appropriate to the individual concerned. So that in short was then the DeVos case. Now, I'm going to quickly skip the Pedro case, and I would like to just take the committee through the provisions of the bill that then aims to give effect to the DeVos case. Now, those are primarily clauses 1 and 2, Mr. Chair. And if we look at clause 1A on the second page of our bill, you will note that we merely aim to amend section 77(1) of the Criminal Procedure Act to replace an outdated term with a more acceptable term, and that is the term mental defect to be replaced with intellectual disability. The main amendment of section 77, which then aims to give effect to the fourth case, then you will find in clause 1B, which is the proposed amendment of section 77(6). First of all, at the bottom of the page, you will see that the compulsory word shall will be replaced with the word may. And on the remainder of page 3, then at the top, you will find that the court will now be given a discretion to order that the accused person be detained in an psychiatric hospital. That is now in the cases of serious offences, Mr. Chair. But the court will have that discretion to either order that the accused be detained in a psychiatric hospital, or then that the accused be detained in a correctional health facility of a prison. This is only of a temporary nature, and that is where a bed is not immediately available for the person in the psychiatric hospital, together with the fact that the accused person may pose a danger to him or herself or to other persons. The third option that the court will now have is to order that the accused person be admitted to and detained in an institution as an involuntary mental health care user, as contemplated in section 37 of the Mental Health Care Act, or even that the accused person be released subject to such conditions as the court may consider appropriate. Then the proposed amendment to section 77(6A)(2) is fairly in line with the discretion given to the court under the amended section 77(6A)(1) to the extent that the court can now, in less serious offences, the court can order that the accused person he admitted to an inmate in a designated health establishment and dealt with as if he or she were an involuntary mental health care user, or be released subject to such conditions as the court considers appropriate. Or, Mr. Chair, in the case where the court found that the accused did not commit the offence, be released unconditionally. The amendment in reflected in clause 1C is of a consequential nature as a result of the amendment of section 776A1 and 2, and that is just to ensure that if there is a successful appeal against the decision by the court of first instance, that the matter be referred back to that court of first instance to deal with in accordance with the provisions of the Act. At the bottom of page 3, we have subclause 2, which also, to a certain extent, then deals with the false facts. Subclauses A to D and F replace the outdated term of mental defect, wherever it appears in section 78, with the more acceptable term of intellectual disability. And then if we look at subclause E, Mr. Chair, on page 4, we will note that that clause deals with the detention of a person in prison and requires that the person concerned be detained in a correctional health facility of a prison. Once again, the temporary nature, where a bed is not immediately available in a psychiatric hospital. And second to that, if the court is of the view that the person poses a danger to him or herself. Remainder of the amendments, Mr. Chair, in that section is merely of a consequential nature. And then, of course, I highlighted that we intend or recommend that the term mental defect be replaced with a more acceptable term. Now, if I may briefly get to the Pedro case, Mr. Chair, I've indicated to the committee that the panel that is established, or the reports that are required in terms of section 79, is either by a single psychiatrist, where we talk of accused persons who are accused of less serious offences, and then in the case of murder, culpable homicide, rape, compelled rape, and offences involving serious violence, the court orders that a panel be constituted to look into the mental condition of the accused person and report back to the court. Now, in the Pedro case, the composition of that panel came under scrutiny to the extent that there was a sort of disagreement in that case with regard to the interpretation of the provision dealing with the constitution of that panel, and that is, of course, section 79(1) of the Criminal Procedure Act. In short, Mr. Chair, and possibly if the members are interested in establishing precisely what the concern was in the Pedro case, I will ask Advocate Tennyson just to give us some guidance in that regard. But what happened is, in the Western Cape, there was now a specific interpretation associated with section 79(1) of the Criminal Procedure Act. And we decided that it was a good thing, in order to bring legal certainty, to amend the Act so that those provisions are applied consistently throughout the country in all the provisions. And it will amount to the fact that in the case of less serious offences, an inquiry must be conducted and reported by the head of a health establishment, if that head is a psychiatrist. If the head is not a psychiatrist, then that report must be produced by a psychiatrist, who will then be delegated by the head of the health establishment. And then in the case of serious offences, panel must be constituted and consist of at least two psychiatrists, a third member of the panel, namely a psychiatrist, may be appointed by the court upon application of the accused person, and then a fourth member could be appointed if the court thinks it appropriate to do so, and that will be a clinical psychologist, if the court so directs. And then, once again, Mr. Chair, the remainder of the proposed amendments there is also of a consequential nature, once again, just to address the outdated term of mental defect. Mr. Chair, in short, that is the criminal procedure amendment for.
Is a presentation. What is your response? Is there anything out of that? Mr. Dupree has dealt with it. It's a technical little ball. I would like to think that the issues are relatively straightforward, and that we're addressing something that the Constitutional Court has found to be lacking, and we're simply giving effect to a gap in these provisions of the criminal procedure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems as Ms. Kennison has come all the way to Parliament, perhaps we should hear what she has to say about her view on it. She is here and we might as well benefit from her insight. Ms. Kennison, the prosecutor.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to, before Ms. Dennison answers, I would just like to indicate, and I apologize, I've forgotten, but it is on the PowerPoint presentation. The process of drafting the bill was associated with a task team that was established and represented by the Department of Justice, the National Prosecuting Authority, South African Police, and the Department of Health and Correctional Services. That was the task team that was responsible for drafting and preparing the bill. After that process, we made the bill publicly available for comment by interested parties. We've received comments from the mental health care.
Why are you going back there?
Chair, no, I just wanted to indicate to you that Ms. Tennyson was a member of that drafting team. That is actually what I wanted to say before she responds to the question.
Why do you think she must necessarily talk even if there's nothing to talk about?
Mr. Chair, if she has nothing to talk about, then that's just fine. But she must have some personal insights, having been on the drafting team and having been involved in the cases. So it would be interesting to hear her viewpoint.
No, I think an agreement has been reached on the amendment. The amendment has been presented. Now we can only deal with the amendment. And then this is the time for honourable members to raise matters of the amendment. Honourable Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I might just speak to worried how the team was constituted to look at the amendment itself, generally. What interests me and draw my interest is the way these terminologies are used. So I want to know who constitutes these terminologies. Because you see now the other term, mental defect, has been replaced by intellectual capacity. How are these terms defined and who come to a point where we say, initially we said a person who's mental defect, now we say intellectual capacity. Because that is intellectual capacity to me is a broad concept that, so who may have to be assisted. And in my view, that when I look at this amendment, it looks like it caters for a certain section of the entire population, because everything is just technical, and our attention is not drawn to say what really constitutes the terms that I'm talking about. But if we should go down reading the amendment itself, the last component, it also says unconditionally. Person may be released also unconditionally. It gives the court to say that. Does it mean if you say somebody's, according to whose yardstick, would we say this person is intellectually incapable, to an extent that the court will have to arrive at saying we may have to release that person unconditionally? Because those yardsticks must be clearly provided for, and there must also be objective yardsticks, so that it does not, the person doesn't just go to court and say, no, this person is intellectually not capable, then take this person home or something. But I'm just, you're not seeing the yardstick against which we want to use this amendment to assist the process that the Constitutional Court says we must deal with. Thank you.
Yes, I've always been wondering, maybe, whether there is no provision for traditional healers in this particular thing, or are they regarded as not part of the process? I'm wondering whether it cannot be provided for. I think that the fact that there's another way that some that African people do believe in certain things. Perhaps a person who may say that in terms of the psychologist, Europe or Western psychology, that person is not normal. In the eyes of that, may see, be seen differently by an African person may see that. This is what the person believes, particularly if the patient is an African. I was wondering if it is, there is no provision that assists in that panel of yours in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Natsu, for the presentation. Constitutional Court has given Parliament maybe 4 months to rectify the defense of Section 76. And now we are only, that was delivered on the 26th of June 2015. And now we are in 2017. We are only left with 3 months. And then I remember when we were dealing with Sexual Offences Act, the amendments thereof, you remember we had to approach Constitutional Court now and again to ask Parliament to request extension. Now, and there were utterances which were made regarding the risk and so forth. So do you think this time, because of this, the time frame, we'll be able to make it, as we are only left with 2 months, few weeks? And the issue of reluctance of Constitutional Court in giving us a extension in that regard, do you think we will be able to make it within the set time frame? Thank you, Chairperson.
I think it would be important. I know that Mr. Bassett trying to explain the delay, that we really find out what caused the delay. Because if we have to approach the court for extension, we've got to motivate. Secondly, you know, we have been talking about the law that we cannot talk about the transformation of the legal system without talking about the transformation of the law curriculum. And now the questions that the members are raising here point to the urgent need to transform the legal, the local curriculum. But the government seems to have left this matter to the universities. So the universities are given the right to determine the pace of transformation. And the universities were not elected by the people. We were elected by the people as government to transform this country radically. So I think that we need to go back to the question of transformation of the curriculum, the question of the introduction of indigenous languages as compulsory subjects in the curriculum, because without these indigenous languages, we are disempowering African people from participation in shaping the future of the legal system in their country. For instance, as Member Bongo and Member Mpunglon correctly put the question, sometimes we talk about mental, sometimes we talk about intellectual, what is the relationship between the two, but there's also psychological issues. What is the relationship between psychological and the mental issues? My little knowledge is that the intellect is the same thing with the mind, and then the Latin people will say mens, and then we have the word mental, but you have psych, and then we have psychology. Now, the mental capacity or problems, when we deal about, are we dealing with psychological aspects or intellectual aspects, or which is which? Now, if the terminology is not clear, how are we going to be sure as to what we are talking about? When we talk to our people, how do we explain what are these things in our African languages? If an African patient comes, he says something, how do we distinguish that something as psychological or intellectual? So I think that transformation really requires that we need to go back to the drawing board, look at the curriculum, what type of lawyers do we produce? Are these the lawyers that actually can take our people forward? Now, as Honorable Mpumulo has said, there are also issues of spiritual. Indigenous African people are very spiritual people, and there are lots of phenomena that they explain in terms of spirit. Now, if we deal with this patient there, some of them are suffering from things that can only be explained from the spiritual standpoint. How do we deal with those things without perpetrating further injustices on the people? And that also raised the question of the demographic composition of task teams. Now, if we are going to put together a task team that is not representative, how are we going to produce a product that will actually take care of all aspects of the situation we are dealing with? So I really think that we need to look at this matter holistically. The department told us a long time ago that there is a task team at the university that is dealing with the curriculum. Now we are in the 10th year, some of us in this parliament. The reports don't come. And now there was a report on the jurisprudence where the University of Natal was commissioned. We are in the 10th year. The report doesn't come. And all those people are being paid. Now, are we throwing the
money into a toilet pit, or what are we trying to do? So I think that we are not moving enough to change. At the beginning of the last term, the president said every department must show a radical transformation plan. And I think we need that like yesterday. But our society is diverse, and when we address legislation or any issue, that diversity has to be reflected. Otherwise, we are going to, administer injustice in the name of justice.
Thank you, Chair. Having listened to what you and other colleagues have said, I think we are back at the point where one must remind this committee that in many instances, obviously, we are in a position to set the agenda also for the department, and in other instances, we are reacting to what our apex court, the Constitutional Court, and other courts have found, and addressing constitutional inconsistencies in our legislation. And with all due respect, I think you and some other members are conflating the two ways this committee must and has functioned in the past. And so I don't want to address the merits or demerits of your comments regarding transformation, etc., but to say that we must not lose sight of the fact that we faced with, as the department said, a technical bill to react to findings of the Constitutional Court, and that's a duty of Parliament and ultimately this committee. The danger is, I mean, the Honourable Mutapu has referred, and yourself, to again approaching the court for an extension. But I think we must rather ask ourselves whether it's not possible to discharge ourselves of the duty we have in terms of the court order. Because the danger is that should the court not give the extension, and we, for, I think, reasons that's not really relevant to the bill at hand, has delayed the finalization of the bill, then we might be found with a situation where the court can read into the existing legislation provisions to rectify the inconsistencies. And then, as members of Parliament, we will be complaining about the separation of powers and the court overstepping the boundary, etc., etc. I think it's a valid question to ask of the department to give us specifics as to why we're faced with a short space of short time left to rectify this, given the fact that the court gave us 24 months. But I don't think we will be assisting this very technical task of Parliament if we conflate the issues and try and integrate the other issues members may have with the legal system and the curriculum, etc., etc., and bringing this into this bill. I think this is a situation where we must have a very narrow-minded approach, a very focused approach, and deal only with this bill. That is my plea.
Thank you. I'd like to know, Section 77 and 78 provide for, in cases of serious offences, that the court may order temporary detention in a correctional health facility until the bed becomes available in a psychiatric hospital. I want to know if protocols are in place between Department of Correctional Services and Department of Health that will ensure the transfer of such persons immediately a bed in a psychiatric hospital becomes available. Bearing in mind that the Correctional Services White Paper on Remand Detention and my own experience from literally tens of phone calls from people who either are detained in a correctional health facility or parents of such people who really become quite frantic that their children or relatives are detained in a prison effectively for up to 2 years and longer before a bed becomes available. Surely this cannot be justified. And it is not a solution to the problem. There must be a better solution. Then in the Pedro case, it's highlighted that within the Office of the Western Cape Director of Public Prosecutions, there were irreconcilable differences regarding the composition of psychiatric panels. What were those differences precisely, and have they been resolved? And then the position with regards to the appointment of private psychiatrists and psychologists on the panel. Why is this not specifically provided for? Thank you.
I have just left the room. Honorable Horn, it can be correct that we say we want to look at these matters narrowly because it is not just constitutional inconsistencies, as you put it, that we are dealing with. At the center is that we are dealing with the capacity of people to form an intention, because there can't be a crime unless there's an intention to commit that crime. Now, we are saying that that question of intention involves psychological, psychiatrical, mental, and other issues. So we can't just say we are dealing with a technical matter, with the constitutional inconsistency. There are formal aspects or technical aspects and substantive aspects, and we must deal with these matters holistically. And also, we don't want lawyers that will just be technicians. We want lawyers that must understand these matters holistically, and that's why lawyers work with psychiatrists, social workers, psychologists, and so on. So we are saying we need a transformed lawyer, and you can't transform the lawyers unless you transform the law curriculum. So this is a call on the department to say, what is the report? Where is the report of the people that are dealing with the curriculum? We need to know. And the report that was commissioned to the University of Fort Hare on jurisprudence, where is that report 10 years after our elections? And also the composition of the task teams, they must reflect the demography of the country. Otherwise, we are not going to transform this legal system. We are not going to transform the country. And we can't be a justice committee that is not transforming. So that's all that we are saying. But also is we cannot just sit here and want to meet deadlines of the Constitutional Court without ensuring that what we do will ensure that there's justice in the country. So the questions that honorable members are raising are legitimate. And the question of delay, we have said that we need the reasons for the delay because we may have to approach the Constitutional Court for the extension of time. So, Mr. Bassett, can I... some other matters I'm raising actually need your principles, because it's your principles who must ensure that we are not promised things and wait for 10 years before the fulfillment of the promises.
Thank you, Chairperson. I actually am supporting what you're lamenting about, because we need to actually bring balance to the rest of the day, so that at the end of the day we can be in the position to manage to reach our goal of transforming South Africa. There's quite also a number of areas where you find that work has been done, but it has not been concluded by the Department of Justice. And I think maybe we need an audit of that. Because at some stage also we were interested in having judgments evaluated. So that they actually talk to this that we are always busy with when we're sitting in this room. And if those processes are not concluded, we will keep on running like a runaway train, dealing with judgments of the Constitutional Court without really looking at the entire system and to what extent it's actually going to be talking to what the intention of the Department of Justice is all about. So I do support your sentiment, Honorable Chairperson, when you actually lament about work that is happening. And I wonder whether the department itself is aware of what is still happening and why it's still happening. And even the whole issue of being informed now that this legislation has been with the department for 24 months to amend. I mean, it leaves much to be desired. And then it comes to the committee and it starts looking like the committee is impossible and the committee can actually quickly respond to it when we're supposed to actually also apply our minds to what is actually brought before us. Even the reasons, I think Chairperson is correct, we need to find the reasons why work sits with the department for so long. And this is not the only thing. I think some a few days down the line, there was something else that was actually mentioned that if not approved within 16 months, it will then therefore be taken that it has been approved by the committee. Which actually I also find it weird. That is, what it means is that the department can also sit with work, and once it's not brought to the committee, then it's actually assumed by some policy in the department that the committee should have approved. And it's those things that we need to actually look at in order to make our work meaningful. Otherwise, we're going to keep on coming in and out of this place, working together, but not really managing to achieve the goals of the people of South Africa.
Thank you, Chair. It's going to be difficult to respond to all those aspects that have been raised about the curriculum and the indigenous languages and the composition of the task team. Can I undertake, you said we must speak to our principals, can I undertake to go back to the department and my principals and discuss these issues and the audits that are being requested? Yes, on the terminology, I'm going to ask my...
instead of discussing, the truth is that FORTE has been given money to assess the jurisprudence. Then maybe they must bring the team in FORTE to tell us why should it take 20 years to carry out the work for which they have been paid, and what was the purpose of this work. If the purpose was to assist this parliament, then we can wait for 20 years. And the curriculum in the universities, there's a committee that is dealing with the matter. Maybe that committee must come us here, tell us whether they are capable or not of doing the work. And then if they are not capable, we will find other people. There are many people that can do the work. But also, with regard to the composition of the task teams, there are so many black unemployed graduates that can be employed as interns, and they sit in the task teams. They will bring other cultural aspects to the discussion, and then we will not have a situation where only the Western philosophical positions come are brought to bear on the discussion. We'll get the Indians coming with their ideas, the colors, the Africans, the whites, and then together we can produce something that is representative of the people of South Africa as a whole, because we want to find solutions that are applicable to all South Africans, not one section of the population.
Thanks, Chairperson. As we are asking for follow-up on the work, if that work is being done on behalf of the Department of Justice, who in the Department of Justice is waiting to receive the work? Those are some of the things that we need to look at, because I mean, if there is an institution that's delaying, who's supposed to be sending them reminders. And that's something that has got to do with accountability mechanisms that are actually built within what we are trying to do.
Thank you, Chair. As I say, I'm not in a position to give talk about those specific aspects of the committee's requesting now, but I do undertake to convey the seriousness and the anxiety of the committee that's been conveyed to us today. Thank you. I'm going to ask my colleagues to deal with some of the issues that were raised, for instance, about the terminology. It might be useful, Chair, on the terminology and the issues that you raised about psychology and mental disability and intellectual disability, to get somebody from an appropriately qualified person from Falkenberg, who deals with these matters on a daily basis, a psychologist, I think, or psychiatrist, Professor Galiski, to come and assist the committee on that. I think it would be a useful exercise to follow. But we can.
I think we can also get Dr. Wally Sorute and Peter Ganduli to come and hear what African people are saying about this issue.
I'm sorry,
Dr. Wally Sorute and Professor Peter Ganduli.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, on the issue of traditional healers, we've heard what has been raised and questions that have been raised in that regard. It's something that we're going to have to think about going forward. We take note that the Criminal Procedure Act doesn't deal with issues like that, and it's maybe something that really needs to be looked at going forward. Can I hand over to my colleagues on the other aspects, terminology, to the extent that that's possible, in the absence of somebody like Professor Kaliski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason specifically why it's not necessary to define the terms in the Criminal Procedure Act is exactly that there is just one test that must be applied, and that is in order to determine whether a person is capable under Section 77 of understanding the proceedings so as to make a proper defense. So when a psychologist then sees the accused person and evaluation is made, whether that person does have the capacity to understand the proceedings or not, as I've mentioned in the case of serious offenses like murder and culpable homicide, the panel will consist of more than one psychologist, and in the case of less serious offences, it can only be one person. That is the Section 77 scenario. The Section 78 scenario is where the accused person cannot be held criminally responsible for his actions because of his, if I may use the term loosely, mental condition. And then once again, a distinction is made between serious offences and less serious offences. And then in the case of serious offences, once again, a panel will be constituted, more than one psychiatrist, to look into the question whether the person, as a result of his mental condition, does not have the capacity to understand that what he is doing is wrong, and to act in accordance with that appreciation. That will be the test then on a psychological level for determining whether the person should then eventually not be found guilty of his actions. I'm going to ask my colleague to possibly answer the questions of the different interpretations that were presented to here in the court in the Pedro case, and then possibly also just briefly refer to the protocols. Thank you, Chair. I'm handing over to Advocate Jennison with your permission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to see some discernible differences in that was mentioned in the Pedro matter. As lawyers, we differed how to interpret section 79(1)(b)(2), Roman 2, whether the default position should be that there's always there are always three psychiatrists, one the medical superintendent, and or somebody appointed by him when he is not a psychiatrist. Two, Roman 2, a private psychiatrist, somebody not full-time in the service of the state. And number 3, Roman 3, a psychiatrist appointed by the court for the accused. Whether that should be the default position, or the other position was that whether there should be two psychiatrists, the medical superintendent or his delegated person, and a person appointed for the accused for the by the court, for the accused by the court, and the third psychiatrist, or otherwise called private psychiatrist, whether that should only be on application by the prosecutor, as read with section 79(13) of the Act. That was the irreconcilable difference, whether there should be three or whether there should be two by default. And that is the reason why our office submitted the two viewpoints, and Judge Rogers and Vince Waters indicated that they want to hear argument, and they asked the Legal Aid Board to, and Advocate Klopper from the Legal Aid Board was asked to give an input, as well as the Board of Justice, and they were represented by Advocate Legrandi EC, leading with Mr. O'Brien from the bar. And the outcome was that Judge Rogers and Prince Waters indicated that they prefer the interpretation that there should be a default position, that there are three psychiatrists important, and on application by the prosecutor, it can be dispensed of the private psychiatrist. And the background of the amendment is because there's a scarcity of private psychiatrists in the whole of the country, not only in the Western Cape. In certain provinces, there are none available. And in other provinces, there's just one. For instance, in the Western Cape, we've only got one person. And that then is the reason for the call that the legislation should be amended to provide for a healthier position as far as the use of resources as well as the cost involved by appointing private psychiatrists. That is as far as the irreconcilable difference is concerned. I hope I answered the question as far as that is concerned.
No, with respect, for instance, the difference is about the number. We're not told what are the substantive issues involved. Because if you say we need three, because they have required different expertise from each one of them, but the differences are about the number, whether it should be two, whether the other one should be on the application by the prosecutor, and then and so on. So it means the whole system becomes so technical and expensive that is not helpful to a third world country like ours, but that's not your problem. I'm just observing that the whole thing becomes too technical, because if you say you want two people, you should be able to say you require two different skills that neither of them has. But we can't just talk about three or two and the third one on application and so on. But anyway, that's not your fault. I'm just saying that the system sometimes becomes ridiculous.
Ms. Bruttenhout-Bach also raised a concern as far as when state patients who are referred to temporarily to a correctional services facility when there's not a bed available in the psychiatric hospital that was indicated by the courts, whether there's anything in place to ensure that they don't languish there for a long period of time. There is a protocol that is signed by all the stakeholders, all the different departments, and in Article 8 of the which deals with the responsibility of the Department of Correctional Services, and I then refer to number 2 in there, which says within 14 days of being notified of the details of the transfer of the state patients to the health establishment in terms of Section 41 of the Mental Health Care Act, the head of the DCS facility will make arrangements for the transfer of the state patients to the health establishment as set out in the notice. So the responsibility on ensuring that the person is indeed moved, the state patient is indeed moved from the correctional services facility to the state psychiatric hospital is indeed in place. So that there is a protocol in place as far as that is concerned. So the court will make the order that the psychiatric patient or the state patient need to be detained until such time as there's an order in terms of Section 47 for his discharge at a specific psychiatric hospital. If there is not a bed available, then he can go to a DCS facility, but that is temporarily, and the responsibility is on correctional services to ensure that that is done as soon as possible.
When we have all these overcrowded facilities, how do we make a law that imposes an obligation on the correctional centers to provide beds when they are open?
The correctional services is not under the obligation to provide the bed. It is, in fact, their responsibility is to ensure that the person is transferred as soon as possible to a appropriate psychiatric hospital. So they only keep the person temporarily, not on the long term.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I would like to add to that, Mr. Chair, we've tried, and I think the Constitutional Court gave us that guidance to build in, if I may call it, a sifting measure to ensure that the numbers being sent there are not too many or does not add drastically to overcrowding, to the extent that that will only happen if the accused person forms a threat to him or herself or to other persons, if that is complied with, if that requirement is complied with in the eyes of the court, then the court can, then on a temporary basis, order that the person be detained in that correctional health facility.
Yes, please.
I understand perfectly what you're saying, and I understand perfectly the need for it. However, it is clear from DCS that some people end up spending up to 2 years waiting for a bed. And that cannot be acceptable. It simply cannot be acceptable. There must be a better way of dealing with it.
So we have agreed that you are going to bring somebody to deal with the other aspects. Maybe we should also bring people from DCS. And then we bring those experts on traditional healing. And get another date. The committee secretary will arrange another session with those other people. Thank you very much.
Honourable, may we be excused, Chair?
Yeah, Chair, I don't know, but are we embarking on a process of also inviting public comment simultaneously, or are we now first waiting for the department to return?
We want to accept that essentially it's a technical bill, but there are some clarification that we need, so it's not really inviting the public. You are well excused.
entire meeting over.
Honourable members, I think that this committee cannot be a technical committee of the Department of Justice. We have to ensure that the laws that are made by this Parliament promote both formal and substantive justice. So we cannot have a situation where all the time we are told that bills are technical bills. We are not a technical committee of the department. Mr. Mayor, you are welcome. Why are you alone?
Cost implications, Dr. Chairperson. Now, I'm actually dealing with these matters on my own. I've been dealing with these matters all along. So my one colleague wasn't able to come along.
He was
in court yesterday. It was Mr. Lowe and Ms. Lesego Makolomakwe. She was not able to attend today. It was quite
so the day the three of you retire, then the commission won't be represented in this parliament because we are not transferring skills to anybody else. There are so many young people who must learn. Then you say costs. So how are we going to transform and empower the young people in the country?
Honourable Chairperson, we have, I'm busy training and giving guidance to Ms. Lesego Makolomakwe. She's been seconded to the Commission as a magistrate for a period of 3 years. She was here the last time as well, but she, unfortunately, on this very short notice, she could not come today. But
why should it be short notice? Because she's working full time for the department. She should be able to avail herself anytime.
Thank you. I will convey that to the Commission Chairperson.
Who is the Commission Chairperson?
Judge Lahori.
Now you must inform the judge that we actually want to see the organogram of the Commission, and we need more young people in these things because there are so many qualified young people roaming the streets, and then we are not empowering them, and when we train them, they must accompany you to Parliament so that they can see how things work here in Parliament.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I hear what you're saying. I appreciate exactly what your concerns are. The only problem is we are magistrates and judicial officers, and we need to deal with these matters. But other magistrates are very reluctant to perform these kind of functions which we are functioning with.
No, they can't be reluctant. Then if they are reluctant, it means they should not be magistrates. How can they be employed and they are giving work and they are reluctant to do the work that they were employed for? Then you should bring that to the attention of the minister who must deal with that matter. There are other people who would not be reluctant to do the work. So those who are reluctant must then go home.
I will convey to the commander.
You say that while the chairperson is lamenting about transfer of skills, you know, lately we have this thing about interns. What has come out in the legal fraternity about those that are not employed? So this thing of internship is actually something that mostly is only practiced by black and like African graduate. It's something that needs to be looked at so that, you know, when we try to correct, you don't come here one day and then you find that when an intern is sitting there, and I'm complaining about this. So that we look at what could be a problem. You know, sometimes you come up with policies that you're thinking are going to actually help? Because the complaint also is that they become interns, but they're never actually allowed to come into permanent positions. So it's really, truly becoming a crisis in South Africa. So we need to start looking at it as we welcome new people, we utilize some of the policies that have got unintended consequences. We look to what extent we can actually create an environment that is conducive for development and advancement of young graduates. Thank you, Chairperson.
Maybe committee secretary, we should write to them, and we must get an audit. How many interns have they taken, you know, the old department since 1994, and what happened to those interns, and why are there so many vacancies that are not filled when there are people who have been going through interns?
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I start with the holy matter? Chairperson, this is the Minister filed two reports with regard to the holy matter. The one is for the removal from office on account of misconduct, and the other one is about the determination of the Magistrates Commission to withhold his salary pending Parliament's resolution to have him removed from office. Chairperson, Mr. Holly is a regional magistrate. He was charged in 2011 with misconduct on 10 charges. He was eventually found guilty in June last year. In his absence, he was duly notified of all. There were a lot of interlocutory applications which frankly delayed the whole disciplinary process to such an extent that the commission, the presiding officer initially postponed the matter sine die pending his High Court application, but then the commission at a meeting in November 2015 resolved that in the absence of any court order interdicting the commission not to proceed with the disciplinary inquiry, they should proceed. And the presiding officer and the person leading the evidence in the misconduct investigation, or inquiry rather, they were advised about the resolution of the commission. They proceeded with the misconduct inquiry. They duly notified Mr. Hawley and his legal team. He actually chose not to be there. He only sent an observer. Evidence was left, and in his absence, and he was found guilty, and the sanction which the presiding officer imposed was to remove him from office. He was all along aware of the position. He didn't interdict the commission to take any further action. So the commission requested him to show cause while he had the opportunity to make representation to the commission, which he did, why he should not be removed from office. This was dealt with by the commission together with all the documents which the commission needs to consider in terms of the regulations, and the commission endorsed the recommendation of the presiding officer to have Mr. Hawley removed from office on account of misconduct. And the recommendation of the commission was accepted and adopted by the minister. The minister, as soon as the commission in terms of section 13(4) of the act recommends that a magistrate be removed from office, the minister must suspend that magistrate from office if his provision is suspended or confirm the provision of suspension. This was done. The minister suspended Mr. Hawley on the 30th of November this year and tabled a report on the 1st of December last year, December 2016. Chairperson, Mr. Hawley, however, took the decision of the commission to court way back in 2013, and he didn't promote the matter. So we requested the state attorney to place the matter on the roll. The matter was placed on the roll on the 24th of October 2016. He requested the that the matter be reviewed, that the commission's decision to charge him with misconduct be set aside, that another presiding officer be appointed, etc., etc. This application was on the roll on the 24th of October last year. The applicant was not in a position to proceed, so because his counsel was unexpectedly taken ill and not able to attend court, then the minister in the meantime suspended Mr. Hoddy from office, like I said, on the 30th of November, and tabled his report on the 1st of December. And on the 5th of December, the applicant, Mr. Hawley, served a new notice of hearing for the 20th of December last year. The matter was before court on the 20th of December, and the North Gauteng High Court removed the matter from the roll, and to enable the applicant, Mr. Hawley, to supplement his affidavit and get the papers in order. The papers were not in order. A notice of sit-down was served at the office of the State Attorney on the 30th of January 2017, and it was on the roll for yesterday. Now, yesterday the matter was before court, and I've just been advised, I was here already in Cape Town, I've just been advised by my colleague and by the State Attorney and his counsel that the applicant only argued before court about the withholding of his salary, nothing about the removal from office. But the judge, the presiding judge, reserved judgment. Now, the commission is of the view that unless there is a court interdicting the commission and the minister to proceed to remove him from office, Parliament may proceed in terms of the act to pass a resolution. Although judgment has been reserved in with respect to both issues about the removal from office and the arguments which he raised in his papers, as well as the withholding of remuneration, his remuneration has been already been withheld as from the 25th of November, so he's not getting a salary in any event. If the court rules in his favour, then he can still be reimbursed as from the 25th of November. So the fact that judgment has been reserved does not take us any further. But this is the position of Mr. Hawley.
This committee asked to make decisions on matters that are pending in court. And then when the court finds otherwise, then what's going to be expected of this parliament? To also go and change his positions? Is it really appropriate for us to deal with this matter when it is still pending in court?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we should rather wait for due process to conclude. And then the matter can be brought to Parliament once even all of the records are available, because for now telephone calls were made and things are set on the phone, which is nothing that we can actually make our decisions on. So my suggestion is that we postpone hearing the matter on the Hawley.
Chairperson, I must concede I don't have anything in writing, so it's hearsay, and I must agree with you in that regard.
If you want to act on hearsay, you have a duty to verify, because there's a lot of work that we need to do in Parliament. We can't come here and adjudicate on hearsays. And also we cannot come here and deliberate matters that are pending in court. We have to respect the processes of the courts. And the magistrate commission consists of lawyers, and lawyers should know that much better than us. So we don't want to deal with matters that are in other forum, pending in other forums. Hello.
Chair, can I just find out, the minister signed these notices on the 30th of November. Was the court date then already settled? Was the minister aware of the setting down of this matter on the one hand, and then on the other hand, while I'm not differing with what other members have said, I just did not get the full picture. On the one hand, there's Mr. Meyer has said that in papers there's an argument made out in respect of both removal from office and the withholding of salary, but then in verbal argument before the court, according to him, and that's now, as you've indicated, only hearsay, there was only arguments made out in respect of the withholding of the salary. So that seems to be also something that must be, I think we must get clarity on in any event.
And also, if you ask people's salaries, are you not prejudging, because the matter is before the court, you withhold the salary, and these people have wives, they have children, why are we in a hurry to withhold salaries before the processes are completed?
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the Minister's decision, the Minister suspended Mr. Hawley on the 30th of November. The matter was before court on the 24th of October, but then counsel was taken ill, so the applicant had to proceed and place the matter, re-enroll the matter on the court roll. By the time that the minister, on the 30th of November, that's more than a month later, by that time there was no application before court, there was no court date. And the papers were only served on the 5th of December, so after the minister and on recommendation of the commission suspended Mr. Hawley from office. That's why the matter had to proceed on the 20th, which could not, and the papers were not in order, like I said, and he made a supplementary affidavit, which was dealt with yesterday. With regard to the application itself, the two parts, I'm unable to respond to that, to the Honourable Mr. Horn, because I haven't got the papers before me. I think I'll say.
Can we agree that this matter is between you and the Minister? And as far as we're concerned, we will never deal with matters that are still pending. So when you come to us when you have exhausted all your procedures, and then when the matter is right for hearing by us.
Thank you, Chairperson. One must just take heed of the fact that if there is no, well, that was the Commission's stance, if there is no court order interdicting the Commission to proceed. I mean, Mr. Hawley can keep the Commission at ransom for many months and years. He can take it to appeal. But if there's no court order interdicting the Commission to proceed to recommend to the Minister to remove him from office on recommendation of the presiding officer, the Commission's stance is still that we should proceed. The Commission should proceed following due process in terms of the Act to remove such a magistrate from office. And that was the case in Mr. Hawley. He was found guilty in June, and the judge yesterday apparently also asked why. This is February, it's months later. Why do you serve an urgent application with regard to your salary and the removal from office only at this very late stage? So the Commission wants to finalise these matters also as soon as possible in terms of the Act. with that regard, the and I know judgment has been reserved with regard to apparently to only the withholding of remuneration, but I think the commission will abide by the fact that we can await the outcome of the judgment. The other matter is about the provisional suspension from office in terms of Section 3A of the Magistrates Act of Ms. Monoledi, a regional court president at North West. The commission received a complaint about her not being in the office, about subsistence claims and transport claims which were allegedly false. The commission considered the complaints and recommended that a preliminary investigation be conducted. Now, this was done by two senior magistrates, Ms. Pokobashi and Mr. Van Vrienen, and they compiled an extensive report which was dealt with by the commission, was before the commission at its meeting in September 2016. The allegations are, a charge sheet has been compiled already and already served on Ms. Monoledi. And the charges relate to 67 charges of misconduct. Most of them relate to her submitting false transport claims and S&T claims, subsistence and transport claims, as well as motor vehicle claims. She would, for instance, be abroad on not for official purposes, be abroad and then claim to be attending a meeting in Pretoria whilst she was abroad, and she was not on leave. She didn't take leave either. There's 41 cases and 41 instances she claimed that she was attending meetings with the commission and with Sajay, which she in fact did not attend. The allegations are that she sells expensive clothing from her boot, from the car, during official hours, under the pretense that she visits regional magistrates within a cluster or within a region. She also applied for a certificate of good standing from the secretary of the commission, although she knew that a preliminary investigation was already approved and she was advised accordingly in writing. She urged the secretary to provide her with a clear certificate of good standing, which she submitted to the JSC to be appointed as a judge. She was fortunately not shortlisted, but the fact of the matter is it is a fraudulent action. Only one charge, but she put pressure on the secretary to give her a clear certificate of good standing, which was actually in fact not have been the case, because the preliminary investigation was already approved and pending. Chairperson, now we have statements. The investigating officer obtained statements from various people. We even went to customs, where she cleared customs on certain days, leaving the country. And she in that time that she was away from the office for unofficial purposes, she didn't take leave, but she submitted the claims for attending meetings. It's not even on a balance of probability. It's beyond reasonable doubt that we have, and we have statements, and we have Sandral statements from Sandral, where she entered and crossed certain toll gates at times, which do not correlate totally with the claims she submitted. And she would claim a subsistence claim or transport claim would amount to about 30,000 rand a month. And then only after 3 or 4 months she would submit her transport claim, and they would deviate. There were discrepancies, a lot of discrepancies, and it is actually glaringly clear that that she defrauded the department. The matter has been reported to the police as well in terms of PECA. Chairperson, once the minister provisionally suspends, Parliament must pass a resolution to confirm the provisional suspension.
I'm going to sound controversial because my previous concern, and even today, is that we have too many of suspensions for women. I think you remember I've expressed it previously. Without looking at the matter at its merits, my worry is the number of women that get suspended, when we know that the percentage of women who are magistrates is very low. And for those that are magistrates, across the color line, they get suspended. It's a comment, you don't have to respond to it. It's something that you can take with home. But at the same time, to say that the seriousness of this matter should have required intervention from the Office of the Auditor General. If you're saying somebody takes away something like 30,000 rands a month for subsistence claim, I think the Auditor General's office should have been invited to come and also do forensic investigation of the matter, not to give it to her juniors, to avoid probability of having professional jealousy making the matter to look worse. My take is that we need to get the Auditor General coming in to do a forensic investigation on this matter before we can actually really conclude this process and deal with this what's her position, suspension, What is her position? Is she a mayor or is she a magistrate?
She's a regional court president.
Regional court president. I think we need to get that audit. And then it actually legitimizes the whole matter. Because if she has done something that is wrong, actions and decisive action should be taken. And even myself, even if I do advocate for protection of women, I'm not advocating for protection of women where there is evidence, genuine evidence of wrongdoing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Mrs. Pilani Mojake that we should all support women, but certainly not women who do what this woman has done. She's the regional court president. She's supposed to set an example. She's never in her office. She does no regional court duties. She doesn't sit on the bench in the regional court. She provides no leadership. And all she does is make extraordinary claims for extraordinary expenses that cannot be justified. So whether she sells clothes out of the boot of her car or not is completely irrelevant. The other matters are sufficiently severe enough to have her suspended, and I move that we confirm that immediately.
Yes, Chairperson, I want to just, and maybe Mr. Meyer wants to, but I just want to react regarding the comments of the Honourable Pilani Mojake regarding the AG. And with all due respect, I do not think what she is arguing for is the route to go. The fact of the matter is, you can still be corrupt and act in a corrupt manner, although the AG will not pick it up, because the AG is all about processes, whether processes administratively have been followed. In other words, did she make a claim, and was the claim paid out by the department? It's not the AG's job to investigate anything other than whether there was, for example, payments made out for travel which was not supported by claims. So I do not think it is a valid comment of the Honourable Pilani Mojake to say that the fact that we sit with the allegations of this magnitude against a senior member of the magistracy must lead to a question whether other institutions have failed. Now, Chair, secondly, we've just heard in Sona again and yesterday in the plenary that this ANC government is ready to walk the talk in terms of the fight against corruption. And I want to say very clearly to the members of the ANC here today, if we are not prepared to suspend a regional court president faced by the allegations of a magnitude like this, after a proper investigation by one of our anti-corruption arms of government, the Magistrates Commission, then we are making a mockery of the statements that we are prepared to fight the fight against corruption. And then we must not even, because I think as a matter of fact, I'm not female, but I think the comment regarding from the Honourable Pilani Mojake that this is not right that there's so many suspensions of female magistrates, actually I think is a slap in the face of all the female magistrates who are doing their jobs correctly. We cannot also throw shade on this process by then asking for some sort of gender activism to be brought in here. I will really strongly support that we support the suspension, and I must already warn the members of this committee that if they refuse in the face of all of this information to support suspension, it will make a mockery of what their president and the minister in the office of the presidency has said in the past few days in respect of the fight against corruption.
I think we are a committee of justice. We must look at everything objectively. We mustn't say that because there were certain pronouncements and therefore we are going to approve the suspension of people. Because because one may ask the question, if this woman does business during working hours and she submits false claims, was she brought, sat down and told her that the following things you are doing are not part of your job description and be warned not to do those things anymore? And also, if you say suspend pending inquiry into fitness to hold office, how can a woman rise to the position of president of the regional court if she is not fit to hold office? How should she land in that office? So is this inquiry actually the route to go? She is in that office. She qualified to arrive there. And now suddenly we say, are you fit to hold office? I just think that there are some rituals that we are following here which may not actually be administering justice to everybody in Kwale. Honorable Bajang.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a pity Honorable Horn wants to reduce this to a political squabble or to political debate, calling names of political parties, when we're supposed to be dealing with this as a committee of parliament, which is a multi-party committee of parliament, that together must always be looking at matters that are brought before it, and together making decisions on the matters that are brought before it. And I'm not actually saying that, questioning the ability of magistrates. When I'm talking about the need for Auditor General to come in, magistrates are not auditors. And here we are talking about something that has got to do with audit, and why the Auditor General must come in and assist. We're looking at the necessary expertise that should legitimize what should actually be information that a decision must be made on. So I don't understand when Honorable Horn is actually saying that the Auditor General wouldn't understand this process and wouldn't be in the position to get to understand the information that's put before them. What is responsibility of the auditors? What are audit plans about? Aren't audit plans supposed to actually guide the Auditor Generals or auditors as to what needs to be done that has got to do with their expertise in order for them to get to understand the situation to advise accordingly? Yes, and also about women, I've actually, as my concluding remarks, indicated that where there is wrongdoing, Honorable Horn, and I've actually said to you, and I'm not talking here as an ANC person, I'm talking as a member of parliament who's supposed to be there for all South Africans and ensure that justice prevails, because maybe we are deceiving ourselves to say that we live in a democratic dispensation. And if we're promoting democratic dispensation, you need to have an ear to listen when we actually talk about protection of the rights of South Africans. And this is why also, somewhere we will actually question what relates to labor matters. And we don't purport as members of parliament that the answers will come from us. We do realize that every matter needs to be taken before the right forum, for that forum to actually look into it, come up with recommendations that can be quantified, brought before us, so that at the end of the day we can be in the position to make a final decision. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think it was honourable.
Nonetheless, I'll make use of the opportunity. Okay, thanks. Thank you so much. Look, I was listening to Honorable Matsake, and I would like to understand from that she opposes the suspension solely on the basis of gender or sexual grounds. Because there are about 7 bullet points here which illustrate the extent and the gravity of the allegations leveled against magistrate concerned him. looking at the gravity of those allegations. They are so serious that nothing other than suspension as an administrative process should be recommended. Followed, of course, after a side has been listened to and the story of their own has been listened to, that nothing other than expulsion or even to be struck of the system be recommended. We can't have people like this in our judiciary. The administrator of justice cannot, regardless of who the person is, cannot face allegations as serious as this. Whether the AG has found nothing wrong on her part, we know that audits can be sanitized, and most of organizations do sanitize their audit reports, the financial statements, and all of that, so that by the time they reach the office of the Auditor General, are sanitized. It's a fact. Now, if indeed these are allegations that the magistrate faces, we must be on the side of justice and we must at all times promote ethical conduct amongst public servants, including amongst ourselves. We cannot falter on the side of ethical conduct in all material time. And I don't see this honorable person having acted ethically in whatever way. I don't see her having acted or behaved ethically. For that, I agree with the recommendation that under these circumstances, a suspension, whether precautionary or otherwise, should be preferred to bring to an end this kind of conduct, to bring some sense of sanity on those who act on behalf of the people of South Africa, and safeguard the interests of the judiciary and the criminal justice system. And for that, I stand with those that recommend the call for immediate suspension.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. One thing for certain, we do have confidence in our Chapter 9 institution, including our Auditor General. It's naive, and it would be naive of us to say some audits are being sanitized. Really, that's very naive. Chairperson, on face value, these allegations appear to be very serious. But there are also questions, especially which need to be answered from Commission side. Especially on the issue of issuance of a letter of good standing, knowing very well that the applicant is to face some inquiries from DC. When a prospective attorney or an attorney applies to Law Society of Northern Provinces for a letter of good standing, further checks will be made to verify. So why then in this case did the Commission not take all the necessary steps to ensure that the applicant is not or is not facing any investigation? I'm not condoning any form of corruption. I'm just trying to clarify in this regard. And again, from the Commission side, Chairperson, according to the documents before us, Ms. Monaleni has been on leave from October last year up to apparently she took leave up to January 2017. So are we just sort of, are we sure that at the time when letters were written to her, or whatever kind of message she feels that was required here before, to inform him of this number of letters that might have reached her, and are you sure they did reach her, as apparently she was on leave from SR examination? And again, may we be clarified, Chairperson, of the origin of this complaint, as Honorable Majanke has already alluded to this professional jealousy of some kind. And the said journalist has been a regional court president from 2003, for the past three years, according to the document. So for the past, then 2017, for the past four, just about to make the specific basis, 13 years, it appears, it's only according to this document and my suspicion, only when she started applying for the position of a judge, that's where the problem apparently arises. And as a committee, we must understand, we even in our various political party manifestos, we are aware, we are fighting corruption. And we don't cease for it. Then I don't think if this all these questions the committee is asking are clarified, the committee will then be in a position to take a very informed decision regarding the matter. Thank you, Chairman.
The other question is more than 3 months leave allowed? What type of leave was that? We will need the explanation. Honorable Horn, Honorable Brittenberg.
Before I No, most certainly not. Thank you. It's very clear from this report, Mr. Chair, that several attempts were made to contact Ms. Monaledi. She refused to participate. Her refusing to participate presupposes that she knew about it. But not only was that done, the chairperson went to see her, explained to her the importance of the process, and explained to her the importance of her participation therein. And despite that, she still refused. So she knew about it. She chose not to participate. She's a regional court president. I'm sure that she knows the seriousness of the whole inquiry. To suggest that a regional court president should be sat down with respect, Mr. Chair, and explain to her that she can't be selling clothes out of the boot of her car during office hours really makes a mockery of the submissions of the previous two members of the committee, to say that she is a regional court president, she's held the position, and so she's a woman of some importance and some needs to be taken seriously. One would assume that she knew that she couldn't sell clothes from the boot of her car during office hours. But that shouldn't be what concerns us. What should concern us is the discrepancies with the travel claims and the fact that she's in fact not doing her job as a regional court president. The area is entitled to a regional court president who does her job, or his job. He should sit on the bench, he should provide direction, he should do the difficult cases, set precedent, make sure that the laws apply properly, and run the office. She's doing none of that. That's what she's getting paid for. And I move that we confirm the suspension without any further discussion.
Yes, Chairperson, I just wanted to touch in conclusion on two issues that has been raised, and the one seems to be the fact that there's failure, there might quite possibly the extent of the misconduct, possible misconduct of Ms. Monaledi, has been aggravated by the failure of the commission or the department or even the AG to pick this up earlier. And I just want to say that that may be the case, and if so, then this parliament and this committee may use another opportunity to meet with those stakeholders who failed to pick this up earlier, so that we can also enhance proper governance and clean governance in this country. But even if the Commission or the Department of Justice, in paying out these claims, and the AG in not picking it up, failed in their duties, it does not take away the factual situation that there was fraudulent claims made. So I think it is quite an invalid and unhelpful argument of some of the members to come and say, but we want first to know why was it allowed to escalate to the extent that there's now tens and hundreds of thousands rands of false claims involved. That's the first point. The second point is in respect of the argument that Ms. Monaledi had been in this position since 2003, and then we are sort of left with the insinuation that since she held this position from 2003, we must conclude that there must be something untoward from other people now when she is accused in 2015. Now that argument, Chair, with all respect, is the same as saying that if you reach the age of 50 and all of a sudden you are accused of murder, you are must automatically be innocent because for the first 50 years of your life you did not murder anybody. It may be so that in 2003 she was quite fit and proper for this position. But people change, situations change, people get corrupted. That's unfortunately a stark reality and a grave possibility. So the argument to say that she's held this office for so long and why do we want to investigate now whether she's fit and proper also does not hold. I agree with the Honourable Breitenbach that we must focus on what is relevant here. And that is that the information we cannot circumvent is that there was fraudulent claims to massive amounts linked with information that there was a total dereliction of her real duty. And therefore, we cannot, pending a hearing into the matter, keep this magistrate on the bench. Well, she's never on the bench, but theoretically on the bench. As a matter of fact, Chair, I do not represent the committee. We've had this discussion. I represent Parliament, but as a matter of fact, and the Honourable Pilani Majaki will, from her years on the Commission, also tell you that members of Parliament are excused before disciplinary matters of the Commission are discussed, exactly to enable me here now to take part in the discussion and the debate.
Now you have answered me. Who else represents her?
No, he's no longer.
From the
ANC. Simang is also there.
From the ANC, is there anyone? You see, we may also be dealing with failure of systems. The department and then our representatives there, and maybe there's something that, as you suggest, Honorable Hall, for us to look at the systems before people become victims of systems. Honorable Mpumulo?
I look at this. I read this presentation. Unfortunately, I was not here when the Honourable Gentleman was trying to explain. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to There seems to be two things here. There is investigation to be done, and there's conclusion already done. They say there is a conclusion to say there is fraudulent claims, and yet investigation is still going. You suspend so that you investigate. There is no thorough explanation as how to arrive at the decision or conclusion that they are claimed that are fraudulent. There's something that says perhaps there is Miss Muna Lady is not cooperating. I don't know whether that's the reason why she should be suspended. So we don't know whether these trips were genuine or not genuine. There seems to be some doubt as to exactly what the position is. I'm worried. I don't think it is proper for us to just rubber stamp what the decision of those people have been. I think when we take decision, we must be informed and know exactly that it is fair. I am not happy because the person is not here to represent herself and say, put her side of the story. We hear one side of the story. Perhaps you took your objective. I don't say you were biased or you were against the lady, but I'm saying that the way you presented it, at least here, that two, one, there is, you still have to investigate and make sure, and then in the meantime, and you have also not explained why, if you're not suspending him, what makes it difficult for you to actually know exactly whether the claims were genuine or not. Of the fraudulent and on so on. And so I'm not sure what suspension would assist the investigation or where you come to a decision. That this is the reason why personally I would think that it is premature to suspend. Thank you very much.
I'm going to a long story. If the observation of Honorable Bunglan is correct, that the matter is not fully investigated, why do you expect this committee to take a decision on half stories?
Chairperson, but it's, I think he didn't hear what I was presenting in the report itself. It says there was an exhaustive and a comprehensive preliminary investigation conducted, and based on sworn statements and other documentation, verified documentation, the Commission is of the view that existing evidence exists which are so serious to make it inappropriate for her to still sit on the bench. We're talking about fraudulent claims, and she is the most, she's one of 9 regional court presidents.
Use the term preliminary investigation, exhaustive preliminary investigation, if investigations are completed.
Chairperson, the preliminary investigation was completed, and based on the contents of the preliminary investigation and the exhibits which were attached to that, it contains of 4 archival files. The Commission is of the view that the allegations are so serious, and the existing evidence before the Commission is so serious that it warrants her suspension from office whilst
preliminary investigation can reveal a serious problem, but the final investigation reveals something else. Is it not possible?
Yeah, Chairperson, the actually final investigation is the misconduct inquiry. That's the inquiry into her fitness to hold office. So she's now been charged with misconduct. She has to respond to that. If she denies all the allegations, she will have ample opportunity at the misconduct inquiry to to place her case before the tribunal.
It would not be correct to say the preliminary investigation was to provide grounds for the second leg of fitness to hold office, and therefore that this is a process, and it's still continuing.
That is correct, Chairperson. The preliminary investigation only, if there is prima facie evidence, the Commission don't even need to conduct a preliminary investigation. We can summarily charge a particular magistrate with misconduct. But in this case, the Commission, because of her status and the high rank she has and the allegations against her, and the fact that she was a member of the Commission, she's still a member of the Commission, she's a member of SAJE, she's a member of various institutions, and that's why she is not always at the office, and the Commission appreciates that. And the fact that that she was even a member of the Ethics Committee of the Commission, the Commission resolved to conduct a preliminary investigation, and a thorough investigation was conducted, and based on sworn statements.
Equal before the law, regardless of the status that we hold. Honorable Pungla.
This is precisely the there is something when you say you suspend somebody who is also very important, and if you feel that there is a chance that perhaps this may not be true, and as far as I have read here, you said she is not cooperative, which means you don't hear, you don't know her side of the story much. You put it to yourself, if it was you, immediately said you're suspended, being an important person. That puts a very, very bad mark on your name, the paper, that's all. The question I wanted to find out, is it absolute necessity that at this stage of your investigation and of what you're doing, you need us to say suspend? Why don't you finalize everything and let us just dismiss that, whatever? Why should we kill her softly and first and attack her and while she's saying, no, I'm innocent in the papers, she's also trying to defend herself against you, your allegations. Is it absolutely necessary?
Chairperson, I think it's definitely in the interest of justice and the image of the judiciary that a regional court president who is accused of misconduct, of which at least 60 of the 76 charges relate to fraudulent transactions, fraudulent submission of claims she submitted, that's why provisional suspension is there for. You provisionally suspend to not to tarnish the judiciary, the image of the judiciary, and for the time being that the misconduct inquiry has been concluded. The Act makes provision, therefore, if the allegations are that so serious, and the Commission is in possession of existing evidence, which is so serious that if she... Well, Chairperson, the misconduct inquiry is to commence soon. She will have ample time. She will have the right to remain silent. She will have the right to appoint a legal team to assist her. But then she can put her version to the presiding officer. That's a tribunal, not before the Commission. And then the tribunal must make a ruling, and must make a finding and a ruling, after which the Commission will then proceed to take the necessary action depending on what the recommendation of the commission is. But that is what the whole purpose of provisional suspension is, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to assist ourselves to manage to conclude the discussion to say that what we are actually putting forward, we are actually supporting you looking into matters of this nature as the commission, because it's your responsibility. But at the same time, because ourselves are supposed to give it the go-ahead, we want to be provided with information that is convincing. And the area that we are not very happy with is the area that says her colleagues, her junior colleagues, investigated her and submitted the report that you are actually basing your conclusion on. And we are saying, why not get one of the Chapter 9 institutions that we believe so much in to come in and do that investigation for you in order for the process to be legitimized before it's brought to Parliament. That's all that we are actually asking. We're not saying you're not proceeding with this matter, but we want to be sure that at the end of the day, there is fairness as clearly articulated in the Constitution of South Africa.
Thank you. Sir, if you're sure there is a crime committed by the magistrate, why don't you charge him? Why is he not charged criminal? Why? I mean, I think just that's enough.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I'm not here to answer on behalf of the Commission. The Honourable Mpumwana was obviously not here when Mr. Meyer informed her that complaint had been laid with the South African Police Services in terms of the Boka Act. But be that as it may, I just want to, first of all, say, Chair, you're right, we have to take a decision. Just want to say we must be clear what decision we are taking. And unlike what the Honourable Pilani Majake has now say we will be saying to the Commission, I don't think that is if we decide not to suspend what we will be saying to the Commission. We first of all, in terms of the separation of powers, I don't think we are in a position to tell the Magistrates Commission that they must now involve a Chapter 9 or the AG or whoever to do their investigations on their behalf. In terms of the Magistrates Act, the Commission is set up and there is the Ethical Committee and the Ethical Division who do these investigations, and if they then find a prima facie case, they embark on a hearing. So they don't need our approval, our endorsement or our go-ahead to do that. They in any event will do that. What they, also in terms of the Act, they are doing is they're coming to Parliament to say the charges this senior magistrate is facing is so serious that, as Mr. Meyer has said and as we agree with, that it will not be to the benefit of the judiciary of this country to keep this magistrate on the bench pending the disciplinary hearing. So that's the simple question we must answer. We can't give guidance or instructions as to the AG or whoever. And my plea still remains, Chair, that it will be irresponsible of this committee to say, given all of the information we have, given the charges faced by this magistrate, no, let's keep her on the bench pending the finalisation of the hearing. Will be an irresponsible decision and we warn against it.
No, Chair. Yeah, may I just clarify with regard to the investigating officers, those are appointed in terms of the regulations for judicial officers in the lower courts. They don't need, it can be any person, a fit and proper person, not even that it need to be a magistrate, but a constitutional court in a Van Rooyen judgment said that magistrates should deal with magistrates. Disciplinary matters about magistrates and involving magistrates should be dealt with by magistrates. That's why we appointed two senior magistrates. And I know Ms. Monteleone had a big problem with that, but who else could we appoint? And it's not necessary to have and she wrote a letter to the judge, to the chairman of the commission, and she was advised accordingly that the law should take its course. It is, we are acting totally within the parameters of the law and the regulations, and that the law should take its course. She, nevertheless, although she has been advised to cooperate, she nevertheless elected not to cooperate with the investigating officers. And so they had to proceed with the investigation without any inputs from her. But she will have the full opportunity.
How long would the inquiry into fitness world office take?
Chairperson, there are a lot of witnesses. It depends on what is she going to plead and what is she going to admit. But it will take some time. It will take some time to finalize this. But we'll do it.
But
as soon as
what's the estimation of the time?
Well, we need to appoint a presiding officer as a serving magistrate.
Is it suspension with pay?
No, we don't touch on the pay as yet. There's no.
Honourable
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I think maybe as a point of departure, maybe the fact that either the chairperson of the committee or a member of this committee does not sit in the magistrate commission, it also provides us with a lesser information in terms of how to deal with these matters, because what is important is that when a matter is brought before us, we must have a full knowledge, and we must be in a position to give also our reason. But the fact that, like Honorable Horn is saying, it comes here and then asks us to rubber stamp, it's not necessarily correct. We're not going to do so because we are politicians. We're going to raise political issues around every matter. Like, for instance, since I've arrived here, most of these suspensions and removals, 80% of them are just black people, black magistrates. So those are the issues that I'm interested in. And I want to know how do we deal with these matters and what is the attitude on the ground. Remember the case of Delmas. You see? So when you check deeper into the cases, you realize that there are also deep, either political differences amongst them at the point where they are, or there are some racial tensions that are taking place at that level. It's the role of Parliament to look at those issues and provide proper solutions around those kind of issues. But if we're not satisfied about the whole procedure which was followed in terms of getting to suspend and so on, we have a right, and it's within our right to say, go and look at 1, 2, 3. And we just defer the matter a bit so that we are able to satisfy ourselves, because that is our role. It's not like we're taking in a bad attitude and so on. But I think now, if the issues that relate to fraudulent issues relating to the office, there is an auditor general who must also provide some opinion so that whenever you put something on the specific person, you at least have what we call a prima facie case on how to proceed with some of these things. But just to look at the matter and want to take a decision and want us to come and rubber stamp it may give some problem. So I'm recommending that let's postpone it a bit. Let's get further information in terms of what exactly is inside this matter, then it can be brought before us in the next sitting. If we are also satisfied, we'll be able to say, let it proceed the way it must proceed. But it will be unfair of us, and it will be us having to fail to discharge a duty given us by both the Constitution and the people of this country, just to arbitrarily dispose of a matter because it was presented and so on. So we've got to satisfy ourselves. So it can be presented in the next sitting. Let's look at it with more facts that will satisfy us.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, no, I'm very worried in the manner in which the investigation was rushed. If you look at the time frame here, it says the investigation started on the 29th of October. It means the month of October cannot be counted. So it was done in November. December is a dead month. Then it was also done in January, which is also a dead month. And it was concluded on the 11th of February. And in that time, there was never any physical contact with the concerned magistrate. It was telephones, it was electronic information. There is no proof that anything was served on the particular magistrate. But and then the Audi alternum principle was never adhered to because they never even bothered to get in touch with the magistrate. And here we must now just rubber stamp something that it's just actually done very hush hush. I think it's not correct.
Would you agree that the investigation was rushed and that the audio terror pattern rule was not observed?
Not at all, Chairperson. I totally disagree. The report says itself that the investigation commenced in October 2015. It was concluded in June 2016 when the report was filed. Ms. Monaledi was on various occasions, and the report says itself that on various occasions she was invited to cooperate, to be at the office. She elected not to do so. Even after the chairperson of the commission wrote her a letter to cooperate, she refused. And only when the charge sheet was served on her in November last year, then she only wrote a letter to the minister.
Out of order for us to meet with the commission and just clarify the processes, how the processes are running. And also,
Chairperson, I think the regulations are clear and the Act is clear that with regard to the provision suspension, but if you need further information, then I will submit the further information, whatever you want, but we are of the view that there is, not even on the balance of probabilities, but there is evidence beyond reasonable doubt, or at least prima facie evidence that she committed fraud and being a regional. How about yours? I know. Before being heard, I know it's, but it is so serious.
Yeah,
the evidence we have.
Probabilities, there's prima facie evidence, there's a reasonable. Can we maybe just agree that we will write to you, ask for more information on this matter before we can take a decision, and that we will also seek a meeting with the commission just to hear how do they operate. Because you see, we must not say, because there's a problem of corruption in the country, we must rush to find people guilty and use them as scapegoats for the broader corruption in the country. We have to look at every case on its merits and deal with it as such. We're not going to hide and increase the statistics of how we have dealt with corruption by convicting wrong people.
Well, Honourable Chair, unless if there's some matters which are kept away from us, which if such were to be brought and be revealed before us, will make the process and the deliberations in this meeting much easier. Can the caucus of the ANC provide us with some detailed information about what they know which we don't know? Secondly, we should, as this committee, we should be expected to act in the best interest of the South African public. And it would seem that we are lowering the bar. We're lowering the bar, we're lowering the standard, even far below the executive. The minister has endorsed suspension. We should be holding high moral ground, even over and above the executive. But we seem to be falling far below the executive. And in doing so, we must be careful not to meddle in the administrative aspects of government. We are the legislature. We are expected to act with high moral ground, with uprightness, and not to be seen to be an impediment in the work that the government ought to do, the institutions that are designed and established to ensure that none amongst us, including public servants, behave in a manner which is unethical. I call upon my colleagues from the ANC to remember that we need to act with high moral upright. With high moral ground, with uprightness, and ensure that we regain the confidence of the public, which is being eroded. And with this stance and the argument that has been advanced, we are not helping the situation, but we are further eroding the confidence the public has in the work of Parliament.
No, I don't think we should take this matter further. The simple matter is that the committee requires further information on this matter in order for them to look at the merits and demerits of the request. So I don't think there is something wrong with that, and I don't think that that suggests that something that anyone of us is hiding. And also, this matter does not belong to the ANC caucus. This matter belongs to this committee, so this committee wants further information. And also, we are saying that we need to have a meeting with the commission, because I remember no easy walk to freedom. Mandela says he was in a white man's court. You know, we cannot have 80% of black magistrates being suspended, but when you look at the composition of the committees that suspend the people, it's all white, or almost 91% white. I think transformation means that our institutions must reflect the demography of the country, and it's as simple as that. So nobody should be in a hurry. We have to do things properly. Can we agree that we
I support the motion.
Okay, so now thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. You will have the meeting with the commission, and then you will also spend the time before you take that.
Good, Chairperson. I think it will be very fruitful.
Have a good day.